Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the December 7th, 2022 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. This meeting is also being conducted telephonically to provide further access for the public. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask participants to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel speaking. This morning we have... Here we go. Corinne Myers speaking. We have just achieved a quorum. This meeting is going to be presented both telephonically and in person. Members of the public can visit the RA Housing website to view today's agenda and information on the actions being taken. If the teleconference is interrupted for any reason, we will stop the meeting until audio is restored. Chairman of the Credit Committee, Kevin Orth, will preside this morning. Commissioners and staff, please state your name prior to speaking each and every time. And with that, I'll turn it over to Committee Chairman Orth to call the meeting to order.
Great. Thank you, Corinne. This is Kevin Orth. I now call the meeting to order. It's 9:32 according to this clock. Would you please take an attendance?
I'll do so. Yes, I'll do so. Commissioner Orth?
Here.
Commissioner Designee Cabral?
Here.
Thank you. You have a quorum.
Great. Thank you. We'll go on to, this will be fun. You'll be motioning,
I'll be
seconding.
Yes.
first item is the approval of the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on October 12, 2022. I have a motion to approve. And I'll second it. Have any comments about the minutes?
No.
I don't. Corinne, would you please conduct a vote?
This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, if you're in favor of recommending approval of the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on October 12, 2022, please say aye.
Aye.
The motion is approved with a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. We'll now move on to agenda item number 2, which is recommendation for approval of extension and amendment of revolving construction loans, SWAP, Inc., which is Stop Wasting Abandoned Property. The motion to approve. And I will second it. Great. And do you want to, I'm sorry, I jumped over. Ann, do you want to give a presentation on this?
I think Dean is going to give
a
presentation.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is Dean Harrison. This request is to extend the existing SWAP, Inc. revolving construction loan facility. The master construction loan facility is for an additional 36-month term and increase the line from $2 million to $2.5 million. SWAP uses the MCL to develop single-family and two-family homes for first-time home buyers in the province and other communities. Rhode Island Housing SWAP completed the first master construction loan back in 1999, and we've had to maintain the relationship since then. The existing master construction loan was initially approved by the Board of Commissioners in February 2014 and has been extended twice, most recently in 2019. The current 3-year term expires in April of 2023. However, no new loans can be made in the 6 months prior to the expiration. Under the current MCL, SWAP can complete up to 14 homes at a time, of which 7 must be pre-sales and up to 7 can be on spec. SWAP did not fully utilize the MCL over the past 3 years, primarily due to lack of soft sources and the rise in construction costs. However, SWAP has presented a revised pipeline of 15 homes they are seeking to finance in the next 18 months. In addition to the extension and increase in the amount, SWAP has also requested that the master construction loan be modified to increase the maximum income of a home buyer from 115% 10% to 120% of area median income, to be consistent with other programs such as BHRI, Home Investment Fund, and HOP, which all allow sale to buyers with incomes up to 120% of AMI. While swap preference is to target buyers with income 80 to 100% of AMI, that is only possible if they receive enough gap funding to subsidize the lower price. Therefore, we ask approval of three parts here. One, first is a 36-month extension of the existing revolving master construction loan facility. Two, an increase in the master construction loan facility borrowing limit to $2.5 million. And three, an amendment of the income limits under the master construction loan facility to allow buyers with household incomes up to 120% of AMI. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Tim. Sarah, do you have any questions?
I don't have any.
No, okay, great. Thank you. I have a couple. Dean, is any other organization utilizing this facility?
Yes, we do have other ones that have used it in the past.
Is any, I think, any other organization currently using?
I believe one-end builders, neighborhood builders,
okay,
are using it.
Okay. And it's, I'm echoing the our former chairman here. Has it been widely marketed out there to organizations, do you believe? Okay.
I think, to their credit, our CDCs have done a very good job of building relationships with financial institutions. So they tend to work with credit unions that are local to their business, and which, of course, is resources that we can then use for those who don't necessarily have those business relationships. But I think this is an important and successful program for the work that we do. I think if you look at South Providence, if you look at Oneyville, much of the home ownership done there, much of the good work done there has been done by SWAP and
right.
by formerly Oneyville, now One Neighborhood Builders. Would you agree?
That was exactly what I was going to say. I know, and primarily it's Pawtucket Development Corp doing home ownership and Church Community, and they both have banking relationships in their communities.
There are a number of CDCs who, that's not their business.
Yeah.
It seems like a phenomenal program.
It is an excellent.
Let's see. I mean, obviously very dependent on the subsidies.
Always. Always.
I just had one other minor comment. For the two family, the acquisition costs seem to be rather high. I don't know if that was legitimate or not.
Yeah. This is Ann Berman. I think what that that is the probably the 100% AMI level, but don't forget they can include income from the rental in their in the calculations of how much they can afford to buy. We're actually, believe it or not, we have seen some sales beyond 314.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't phrase my question correctly.
Okay.
The acquisition of the land for 100.
I'm sorry, of the land.
$75,000 a unit just strikes me as rather high.
I think we
but
prices. I mean, Dean can tell you on some.
I think that would be a max. A max price for real estate,
and
reality is people are paying a premium right now.
I was just curious, is that like the market, do you think?
I think it depends on where you are.
And I think the smaller the lot, the more expensive it is, right? If we can get more units on it, as you know, it drives the cost down. I mean, even the single family one is at $67,000, which is...
I think it'd be more than, but anyway.
I think it depends on the lot.
Yeah, okay. I don't have any other comments or questions. Thank you. No other comments or questions, right?
No.
Okay,
no.
Thanks.
Absolutely. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, if you're in favor of recommending approval of the extension and amendment of the revolving construction loan for SWAP Inc., that's Stop Wasting Abandoned Property, please say aye.
Aye.
With a unanimous vote, the motion is approved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll now move on to item number three, which is recommendation for firm approval of acquisition financing for Dakota Properties, Inc. for property located in Westerly. Have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
All right, and I'll second that. And Dean is going to present. All right.
I'm just going to make one preliminary comment. There is actually a correction we need to make in the term sheet in the board action. It identifies an interest rate. We're actually just putting in a statement around that it will be determined at closing based on treasury. We made it in our term sheet. It didn't make it into the action, so we'll correct that before we go to the board. So
okay.
You can kind of give you an explanation of the proposal.
Okay, great.
Thank you. This is Dean Harrison again. This request for action is for firm approval of the Rhode Island Housing Mortgage Finance Corporation taxable holding amount not to exceed $800,000 for the acquisition of land in Wesley, Rhode Island to facilitate the development of 72 units of rental housing. Dakota Properties, Inc. is the developer. Dakota has entered into a purchase and sales agreement to purchase 7.5 acres of land near the intersection of Route 1 and Franklin Street in Westwood. Under the current agreement, the purchase price is $1.4 million. However, if the developer is able to close by December 31st of this year, the purchase price will be reduced to $1 million. The development will consist of two- and three-story garden-style buildings and a community building. It will be a mix of 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom units. As currently projected, there will be 72 total units in the development, of which 57 of them will be affordable to households earning between 30% and 60% of area median income, roughly 79%. And the remaining 15 units will be market rate. The property was previously granted a master plan approval for 53 units, which is still valid, but was not done by Dakota Property. The developer is seeking further approval to construct an additional 19 units. Upon conversation with the town planner, they have confirmed that the developer is scheduled to meet with the planning board in December and January to request a combined revised master and community approval prior to the consolidated application. The town planner also confirmed that the development proposal is supported highly by the town. The terms of the acquisition are outlined in the RFA's credit summary. It should be noted that the issuance of the RFA staff has developed additional draft term sheets, which includes how the final interest rates will be determined. This is different, as Ann mentioned, that was listed in the RFA. We're asking approval of the following, that the credit committee approves or recommends firm approval of a taxable acquisition loan in amount not to exceed $800,000 subject to certain conditions as set forth in the attached resolution. Happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you very much. Question?
I do have a question on this one. So the property at this is Sarah Cabral.
Yes.
The development is for 72 units, but the town has only made approval for 53, and you have to go back in front of the planning committee?
Yes, in the previous, not by Dakota, but another developer,
right.
The town had approved master plan and preliminary plan for 53 units. And now the developer is going back to seek an additional units to bring it up to 72.
Is there concern with the developer? I know sometimes towns will cause issues with this, but are there concerns that there may be
this looks like
issue with making it 72?
Yeah, this looks like it's being done very friendly. They've already met with the community on different occasions. It abuts a mix of residential and commercial. It's really close to the main road. So they don't see any issues. However, as we've all been through this process, we know something could happen.
Right.
Is there an identified takeout strategy?
Not at this point.
So it's a 12-month loan.
Right.
With
month extension option.
So the our collateral is the land. It's a non-recourse loan. We are limiting the loan to value to 80% to give us a little cushion, which is different than we would in our typical land bank program, which is 97%. So we think that by lowering the loan to value, that gives us adequate cushion. It's a great location.
Sounds
so
like it.
We would like to see it happen. We do know that Dakota is preparing to submit a request for credits and soft debt in the next round.
Even at 53 units, we're at 19,000 per unit. So the acquisition number is pretty low.
So I think our takeout strategy is if Dakota can't do it, we find somebody else.
Right.
And we've done that before.
Right. Okay. And the next question I have, it goes to this, but I guess maybe it's a broader question to Corinne. Do we have form legal docs that we can use, or do you have to kind of make it up from scratch each time?
No, we typically have forms that we can start from.
Okay, and this will be all done in-house, the legal work on this?
We haven't had that
discussion yet. No, we'll likely engage external counsel.
Gets pricey for an $800,000 loan, doesn't it?
This is Ann Berman. I mean, we have an agreement with an attorney for our land bank loans. Quite honestly, this is
the real estate transaction.
It's less than $5,000. I think it's the title insurance will cost them a little bit more, but
okay. So it's pretty de minimis then. Okay.
We do our best to keep the paperwork simple. It's a note, a mortgage, and a few collateral documents.
Okay.
And because this is a for-profit developer, this developer doesn't have access to our land bank program, so they have to be one-off transactions that we vet internally before we can bring to the board and ask for your approval individually.
Okay. Does it make sense to do this fully in-house from a legal perspective? I would think that the documents should be pretty standardized and set. Maybe obviously make a few changes for the particulars of the transaction.
Right. So yeah, sometimes that's the case, certainly, and we do kind of make that do that cost benefit analysis for entire programs. You may know we kind of have recently restaffed in our legal department, so we have a new real estate attorney on board. She's getting up to speed. My hope is that there may be some additional programs that we can bring closing activity in-house, but you know we're trying to get her oriented and understand the ins and outs of a particular affordable program.
Okay.
But we do have a pretty good success rate in terms of developing a bench of outside counsel at competitive rates who get to know us, who get to know our forms, and who are, depending on the size of the firm, responsive to our request that they staff our projects with a range of associates and paralegals in addition to the supervising partner so that we can achieve a good economy. So overall, I think that we do a pretty good job getting value when we do go outside, and to your point, we are developing our expertise in this area in-house as well.
Okay, good. I don't have any other questions, sir. Any other questions?
No.
Okay, great. Thank you. Would you now please conduct a vote?
Yes, happy to. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, if you're in favor of recommending firm approval of acquisition financing for Dakota Properties, Inc., for real estate located in Westerly as described in the request for action, and subject to the correction to the interest rate that Ann mentioned in her introduction, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Hearing none and the vote being unanimous, the motion is approved.
Great. Thank you. Now move on to agenda item number 4, which is recommendation for approval of transfer of physical assets for Project Renaissance located in Providence. I have a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
I will second it. Thank you. And Dean, we're up again.
Thank you again. This is Dean Harrison. This request for action is an administrative action required under the general rules governing multifamily loan programs. The request for action is for approval of two items. First, the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Project Renaissance, and two, the approval of future sales of the development. The development is a 30-unit scattered site affordable housing development for families located in the Smithfield area of Providence. The development's initial 15-year compliance period ended in 2015, and the regulatory agreement expires in 2029. The current owner of the development is Guided Realty Limited Partnership. The general partner of the development is Guided Development Corporation, a Rhode Island corporation that holds 0.01% interest in the partnership. The two current investor limited partners in the development are Enterprise Housing Partners 7 Limited Partnership and Enterprise Housing Partners 3 Limited Partnership. Collectively, combined, they hold 99.99% limited partnership interest. They are willing to withdraw and transfer the partnership interest to Smith Hill Community Development Corporation, otherwise known as Smith Hill CDC. Smith Hill CDC is the sole shareholder of the general partner. The current property manager is Demio Properties, Inc. No changes in the management agent is contemplated. After the transfer of the limited partnership interest, Smith Hill CDC and its affiliate entities will own the development. Smith Hill CDC has notified Rhode Island Housing and other communities partners that once the transfer is completed, it will be dissolving and selling its assets, including Project Renaissance. Smith Hill CDC has entered into an agreement to sell the development to Demio Properties or related parties. Demio is a seasoned developer and property management firm with both affordable housing and market rate properties in its portfolio. Demio is the co-general partner with Smith Hill CDC on another low-income housing tax credit development in Rhode Island. The sale of the development to Demio has been reviewed by both the development and lease housing divisions, who have determined that the transfer will be beneficial to the residents of the development and will lead to long-term prospects for the development itself. We are seeking approval of the following two matters. The first one is the transfer of the limited partnership interest in the development from Enterprise Housing 7 Limited Partnership and Enterprise Housing 3 Limited Partnership to Smith Hill Community Development Corporation. And two, the sale of development of the development by Smith Hill Community Development Corporation as a limited partner and sole shareholder of the general partner interest to Demio Properties or its related entities. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you very much, Jane. Is there any questions on this one?
Can you just explain the ownership structure again? I'm sorry, I have a problem. I'm following so the transfer of 99% and that 0.01% interest will still be held by Goddard Development Corporation at the end of the transfer. I just want to make sure I understand that.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
That is very typical of a low-income housing tax credit development, where the tax credit limited partner, in this case it was Enterprise, owns essentially 99% or more of the development, right? And that generates their ability to bring in equity, and then the managing general partner owns a fraction of 1%.
And Sarah, this is Carol Ventura. This is a great opportunity. I know Smith Hill has been looking to exit for a while now, and Demio does have holdings, and Paul Demio has a history of managing affordable development. So I think this is a win for both organizations, certainly for the people that live at this property.
I had a question, maybe following up, Carol, on your comment there. So would you say the closure of the Smith Hill CDC, is that an isolated incident, or is it, I don't know, are there maybe other CDCs struggling with similar issues?
Yeah, I think, over the past, I would say 5 years now, 7 years, we've seen consolidation across the board with CDCs. I think it's just a recognition of the industry and how hard this work is and scarce resources, limited resources, limited talent, and just an aging group of, although they would kill me for saying this, an aging group of CDC directors, right? But I think we've been fortunate that even with consolidation, we've seen excellent people step up to run the surviving organizations. And in this instance, Paul has done this work for decades. He knows our business. He was a board member with Rhode Island Housing, so he certainly understands this industry, and I'm very happy. It could have dragged on for Smith Hill and for the people there in the board, and that wouldn't have been a good outcome, and so I think we're in good standing now. And I'm not aware of any other consolidation going on at this point, and I think we have pretty good coverage across the state, you know, folks like Joe Golic, NeighborWorks, they, you know, tiptoeing into rural areas and covering like the northern part of the state, and certainly our partner church, Community Housing, down on Aquidneck Island has done a terrific job. So, knock on wood if there was wood anywhere, that this is like one of the few.
Okay. Good, thank you. Just one other question. So is the new owner assuming the Rhode Island Housing loan?
Yes.
Is that loan all current?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I don't have any other questions. You're good? Okay. Corinne, would you please conduct a vote?
Mm-hmm. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, if you're in favor of recommending approval of a transfer of physical assets, or TPA, for Project Renaissance in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
With a unanimous vote, the motion is approved.
Great, thank you. That concludes our agenda items. We'll now go into a discussion. Second, please.
Great, thanks, Chairman. This is Ann Berman. So first, we're just going to chat about the pipeline a little bit, which is robust. We've got about 30 projects in various stages of approval between preliminary and firm. Busy for the staff. Trying to get three more projects closed by the end of the, four more projects actually closed by the end of the calendar year. We're going to have a couple of that are going to, you know, we were ever hopeful they would close this year, but they're going to roll into the, to 2023. As you know, we've got the consolidated application out, which is both fabulous and a little frightening. You know, in the last round, we received 52 applications, and based on conversations that Dean and I have had with kind of our regular stable of developers, as well as new developers that have, you know, I think even before this application showed interest, both on the middle income, but also on the affordable side, I'm not going to be surprised if we get 75 applications, which is will be a daunting task, but I think we're up to it. You know, because, and then in addition to all those soft sources, it's also our 9% round.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to kind of have dual reviews going on. We have the very prescriptive review of the QAP, and then we are developing sort of a scoring notebook. Smarter people than I have figured out how to do this in an Excel notebook for all of the other programs. And I think that given the number of applications we're going to get, we're going to really be laser focused on the threshold criteria, so that, you know, we'll be looking at capacity, developer, the financial feasibility, and the readiness to proceed. Not necessarily feel the need to allocate, you know, $160 million of resources, you know, in 2 months, and really make sure that we're funding deals that we know can move forward. So that's kind of what's going on with that pipeline. And just in terms of construction, it's not really wood, but other than a few isolated incidents, we have not seen significant delays yet. However, based on some conversations that we're having with syndicators, I don't know if it's real or anecdotal, but they are very concerned about labor shortages and supply chains and really building in cushions on their place in service.
Yeah. I think there's more multifamily under construction right now than at least the last decade. That's a lot of activity across the country.
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing delays on things like big, like
fire pumps
and things for making water systems go, and the emergency transformers. I think contractors in general have gotten, and developers too, have gotten sort of tuned in to sort of making sure that things are being ordered way in advance. You know, there's big trailers on these properties where they're just stockpiling, you know, cabinets and windows, and so they're there when they need them. So I think folks are adjusting. I don't think pricing has come down yet, but, you know, folks are sort of dealing with it.
Right. Okay.
Hope for a warm winter.
Oh.
Right.
Well, not in Rhode Island.
Right. Well, we'll just
up north.
North.
Yeah, we'll leave it up there and go on vacation.
I won't have time to go on vacation, Carol. We're going to get 75 applications.
Oh, Dean's got it. Okay.
This is the 75 applications that you think. Are you thinking that it's going to be like a nice long gradual submission? Or do you think you're just going to get right off the bat the 75?
Well, actually, I know of one developer who's actually trying to submit their application right now. And we are, you know, we do urge folks to get them in early and not wait until the last minute for a whole host of reasons, not to, you know, including, you know, not wanting our one-stop application to crash because, you know, 75 developers are trying to submit. We do know that there are, it's not 75 different developers, that we have developers submitting multiple applications. And we are really trying to deliver the message that, you know, readiness to proceed is really important. So, and even getting them to sort of prioritize.
When they do, when you get multiple applications from a single developer, do you combine them, you combine the review of those applications?
They're individual reviews.
Individual reviews, but you take into consideration the amount of applications that they come in, that come into play.
Yes. I mean, there's that. There's also, I mean, a scoring criteria. And, you know, I think, again, it goes to the threshold criteria and readiness to proceed. We know it's a small state, so we know a lot. We don't know them all, but we know a lot. And we do know the, you know, sort of some of the roadblocks that are there, just whether it's permitting or construction costs or, you know, it, issues associated with construction, whatever it is.
Do we have, I know that we have a cap on the amount of credit, 9% credits that can go to any one developer, but has thought been given to all this other funding?
There are a couple programs that do have limits per project limits, but the larger ones do not. It's really, you know, that's sort of the challenge for us, again, mentioned making the sausage before, of taking an overall look at the group of applications and seeing where the right pieces fit and seeing where certain programs have certain requirements that might not fit in one but would fit ideally in the other. And just kind of making that puzzle work. You know, we had a good practice with it in the summer with the deals that we approved here in June. This is all going to be a little bit of a different scale, but it's very exciting. And I think the one thing, you know, it's interesting for us because we're forced to consider things that we hadn't in the past. As Anne said, there'll be developers that put in 4 or 5 or 6, and that also has to factor into our calculation of capacity. You could be the best developer in the world, but can you manage 6 new projects all at once? Those are things that we have to consider that we haven't necessarily in the past because it's been much more of an attenuated process of getting applications in at different times. So it's exciting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect to hear very much out of the development group between January and April, but they're going to be hard at work. So it's a very unique, very exciting opportunity. It's going to take a lot of work. But I think we have a very good plan in place to kind of how it's all going to fit together.
Okay. And do we have set deadlines for when awards are going to be announced then?
I knew that question was coming, and I think the answer is it depends on how many applications. You know, if we get 30 applications, it's going to be easier to review than 75. So I think once we know, I mean, we can certainly let you know in January. We'll give you some information. I think deadline, I don't know how that times with the credit committee, but we can certainly provide you with a list of the applications and their requests.
Yes.
And so that you can sort of see the breadth.
I think it would be just helpful for the developer public to know, you know, obviously they're making, you know, agreements, you know, to tie up developments and so forth.
We would assume all the tax credit deals will proceed along a similar schedule to the ones that we've had in the past.
Right.
Hopefully we were able, as we've discussed in this meeting before, by removing some of the presentation requirements, we're trying to accelerate that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very possible that if someone comes in needing a very small amount of gap filler and nothing else, we'll be able to make that decision and make that award in a more timely fashion. The other thing we want to avoid is not having 30 projects to discuss at one credit committee meeting, for your sake as well as ours.
My goal is, I think our goal, we're sort of working on that schedule now, is to be before you by May.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's an aggressive schedule, but it's good to have a goal.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. That is very exciting. It's good to see the anticipated strong
yes
response from the developer community. Great. Any other questions? Okay. I want to jump into surplus cash.
I'm going to tee it up discussion. And Mike is here who could sort of fill in on some of the detail. But, as you know, several years ago we started bringing to this committee some of the refinancing of our existing LIHTC deals, and typically those are deals that don't have the benefit of a half contract. They're often done by our smaller CDC partners. And as part of those transactions, they have rollover debt, often in excess of a couple of million dollars. And as part of the conversations we had with you and other members of the committee, you asked us to modify our surplus cash requirements so that rather than having 50% of the surplus cash go toward repayment of the soft debt, we up it to 70%. And we've probably done 8 or 9 of those deals. Not all of them have converted to perm and really started to stabilize and kick off surplus cash yet. But we've gone back and looked at the deals that are in our portfolio that are subject to sort of the 50% and tried to run an analysis to sort of look at the difference between the 50% and the 70%. And so on average, per project, the difference between 50 and 70% in 2020 was only $8,000 per project, and in 2021 it was actually just south of $5,000. So we wanted to kind of talk about the impact of those dollars on Rhode Island Housing versus the impact of those dollars for the developer, and if we could sort of go back and potentially revisit the keeping it at 50% rather than the 70. And I think for our staff as well, it also, the more conformity we can have in our documents, the more efficient we become. We have to change commitment letters and standard language in loan agreement to accommodate this. So
yeah, I think that's a great point about the efficiency, Ian, but I think most importantly it's about what can these dollars do for developments. You know, we're looking more now at stabilization and having these developments support a handful of supportive housing units, which takes more resources in order to manage those types of properties. So as Ian said, I think what is the benefit to Rhode Island Housing, the financial benefit to Rhode Island Housing for these limited resources versus what could be critical resources for the development to support, you know, the goals of the state in terms of housing formerly homeless individuals, et cetera. So, Mike.
Yeah, just to add, it's a nominal amount to Rhode Island Housing, but I think it's significant to our partners. And especially now in the last 3 years, I think there's been a significant need for resident services, and our partners are keenly aware of that. They're investing their dollars into resident services and even asset management. Seems to go much further with them than it would with us. So it's something that's critical to them, that there's a lot of regulations in property management. There's a lot of time spent on paperwork. So having the ability to maybe hire someone or a portion of a full-time employee to provide services is beneficial.
Couldn't that be handled through project expense, though? You just have resident services as a operating expense? Before the surplus cash line?
So we've never written. Typically, you don't underwrite a property with resident services. If they can afford it, they would then go and.
Not necessarily to underwrite it, but you would treat it as a project expense. Is that?
So you're saying before you ever get to surplus cash?
So we do that, there won't be surplus.
Yeah, I mean, HUD does that all the time. I mean.
Does it. What's in your mind? Why is that an important detail?
Well, to me, this surplus cash is to go to the developer to do whatever they want to do. Right? It's you know, profit, and they can go out and do whatever they want with that profit. Or, but it sounds like the reasons you're bringing up for dropping it to fit is for money to go back into the project,
mm-hmm.
such as for resident services or maybe better compliance or something like that. Those seem to me to be something you. Is an option, I'm saying, you could just approve those as project expenses that would go above the line before you calculate surplus cash.
Like the other thing I'll just add is, so some of our developers, most of our developers own numerous properties, and oftentimes they'll take their money that they're generating from surplus cash and, for example, provide an after-school program for all of their developments, all of the years. So it's not necessarily specific to one development, it's kind of generally.
And
I would add that they also then, if they have enough properties, if I understand correctly, they'll use that money, because it does go to the developer, to hire somebody to do asset management for them on multiple properties or resident services sort of on a larger scale than specific to the development. So it sort of feeds up, and I think the surplus cash goes to the borrower, and then they can do with it what they want, right?
Right, and it seems to work. Those I'm thinking about. Some sites do not generate any surplus cash, so to be able to use those resources for those residents, it seems to work better for them to create a separate entity or a separate effort to provide those services.
And this is just for targeted loans, or when we're rolling over debt, or?
Right. Our standard policy is 50% of surplus cash. So for any new development, that's kind of been our sort of standard policy. It was for these refinances where we were rolling over the debt that we had the conversation about increasing it to 70%.
Okay. I'd just like to see that our loans get paid back, I guess is the bottom line. And
so, and we do too, but we also want to see our developments operate well, and that if we are going to prioritize moving forward in line with the state and their want to house homeless individuals and not to have people sleeping outside or in shelter, then I think we need to think critically about what that does to the developments moving forward and the ability of current existing developments to meet that goal and have the resources they need to keep everybody stably housed and to speak to the demand. So it's a matter of, are those resources to repay our debt more important than what could be stability of developments? And in my mind, having those resources, that 20%, that given the level of secondary debt we have that we carry on in our financial statements, I think it's more meaningful to give it to the developers.
Okay.
I just have a question. Have you done an estimate as to how many or how much this would be a loss of the cost of the surplus to Rhode Island Housing? By project. So you look at each project individually, but is there any kind of estimate, like a long-term estimate for, like, say, a year as to how much there would be missed?
So what I did, and Mike might have more detail, but I took the numbers that his staff did for 2020 and 2021, and in 2021, the difference to the corporation was $154,000, which, you know.
Given the millions.
In 2020, and I get 2021 was COVID, so everybody's receipts were down. It was $257,000. So it's not, in the big scheme of things, I'm not saying that's an insignificant amount, but I think collectively, to Carol's point, it means more to the CDCs than it does to us.
And it realistically is $5,000 to $10,000 per project,
right?
For, you know, I'm not going to, absolutely not going to do the math in a public meeting, but for a handful of projects. And as a as an operator, we're asking folks to submit a very tight operating budget to begin with. And this is just another small incentive for the folks who are operating their property successfully and generating that money. And it's a little bit of an incentive to kind of think about how they can do that in a way that will benefit the property ultimately. And it's, you know, I realize it shouldn't be, but mentally it's one thing to think that money is just going to go back to Rhode Island Housing. Another is I can use that, as Mike said, to do an after-school program or to do something for the seniors in the building or things like that. It's a you know, a bit of an incentive for responsible asset management on top of the stuff that folks already do very well.
So would this be, would you amend previous agreements then so that every previous one is at the 50% as well?
I think we could. That would be relatively easy for us to do.
I think we probably want
as we all look at our attorney
and to come up with some priorities to say, you know, we're now allowing this additional 20%. What are you going to do with it? And how do you envision that these resources will further help the people living in your development to help further the goals of the housing department, state, et cetera? I think we'll take that path. I don't think it's going to be cop launchy, go his money, whatever, right?
Okay.
So
okay.
I think we want some structure around it.
Okay, good. Thank you. I don't have any other questions. Thank you. Is that it?
It is.
That's it.
Yeah.
All right. I guess a motion to adjourn. Okay, and I second it. Corinne, I guess we'll vote on that.
Sure. All those in favor of adjourning this meeting, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. With two votes in the affirmative, the motion is approved.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You're going to be for a while.
Could be better than the